Talking about money is hard. People all over the world were taught never to talk about money, politics, sex, or religion in polite company. But on this show, my goal is to remove money from that list. And so I'm excited to bring you 50 Fires, a podcast about money and meaning from Blind Nil Audio and executive producers Chip and Joanna Gaines. Follow and listen to 50 Fires, a podcast about money and meaning with me, Carl Richards, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to The Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Jamp and Luke Kupfer.
Hello.
Hi, howdy.
This week, we're talking about bug bites and sore stings.
Oh, no.
Is it the science of bee stings?
It's not the science of bee stings. That's actually a bonus episode at some point soon. Yeah. But first, we've got to talk about Spotify, because we're doing pretty well on Spotify.
Hell yeah.
We do need to talk about Spotify.
33,000 followers. 33,315. Wow. Insane. Over 50,000 listeners. So now that we've done Spotify, I want to move on to YouTube really quickly, and I want you all to move on to YouTube as well, because I've got this question for you. Have you ever been bitten or stung by a bug, and what's the worst that you've had? Let us know in the YouTube comments, even if you're listening on Spotify or Apple or anywhere else that you use your ears and not your eyes. Have either of you ever been stung?
I've never been stung by a bee. And it's just never an experience I've had.
Really?
Hang on. You've never been stung by a bee?
Never been stung by a bee.
You've never bothered a bee enough to sting it?
No.
To sting you.
Well, I think I have. It's just never stung me.
Wow.
I have been stung by many bees, many wasps, and also I once stepped on a jellyfish that was like beached on a beach, and now I have, to this day, I'm terrified of walking on beaches with my shoes off.
I have jellyfish stories.
I feel like averaging between the two of you, like there's maybe just enough bee stings, right?
Okay.
Yeah, you can have some of my bee stings.
Average between us, yeah.
Or maybe between you and like between all of us, right?
Yeah. I used to play outside in the back garden on the climbing frame all the time, and there were loads of bees on there all the time, and they used to get me.
maybe Australian bees are just not that aggressive.
They're just like asleep.
Yeah, which is not everything what you think. Else is so aggressive there. Yeah, the bees are just like, well, we've got to take a backseat here.
Hold on. Yeah.
There's no point in us getting into this mess. So you might be wondering why I asked the question of bug bites and sore stings and whatnot. Because this episode is about the Schmidt Pain Index, or the Schmidt Pain Scale.
I have heard of
it. So you've both heard of the Schmidt Pain Scale.
Yes.
Do you know anything about it beyond its name?
Not much, no.
No?
It's like a scale that's used to rate the pain of different stings and bites. And it was like... like different ants and stuff. There's like an ant at the top of it.
Yeah, exactly. No spoilers.
Okay, I've seen TikToks about this. There's loads of TikToks being like, how much does this bug bite hurt?
I think TikTok is actually where I got the idea for this from, because it was just showing up so constantly. And I was like, well, yeah, let's do a story about this guy that decided to get himself bitten by a ton of insects.
Is it fun for Louis?
It wasn't fun for Louis. Louis Schmidt, right? That's his name, right?
Yeah.
No, it's Justin Schmidt, Dr. Justin Schmidt, born 23rd of March, 1947. Yes. Yeah? You know this guy?
Yeah.
He's 75 years old, but he's still kicking. He's still, like, I saw an interview with him from about maybe 4 years ago now, and that guy is so, so cool. It'll be linked down in the description. Oh, honestly, he is an idol of mine. He's so, so cool, so interesting. So he's from Arizona, or he is from Arizona still. You know, that doesn't really change. He's an entomologist, not an etymologist. Do you know what the difference is?
Study of word origins.
As opposed to?
Study of word entomologist. Study of, is it study of insects?
It is. It is the study of insects. Great. Yeah, I'm actually going to double check that because I want to make sure.
With a T.
E-N-T-O-M-O-L-O-G-Y. Entomology, the study of insects, presumably comes from the Greek. Let me Google etymology. No,
etymology. I love it. That's great.
Yeah, it's from the. It's from the Greek entomon, which I believe means insect. It means insect. Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah, an entomon. Yeah, that's a way better word than insect, though, isn't
like
it?
Like a Pokemon.
Yeah.
Go, entomon.
Where did insect come from? That's an ugly word.
So
yeah, imagine if you like went outside and you'd like dug a little pit and you're like, this pit is full of entomons. Yeah. That's so much cooler. Whoa.
So he's an entomologist. He's an expert on Hymenoptera, which is an order of insects, including, do you know what that might be? Hymenoptera. Hymenoptera.
Is it female insects?
It is not female.
That sounds like an Egyptian.
Sorry, I was just thinking through the etymology, you know.
Okay, so he's been stung a lot. So just name some insects you might think.
Bees.
Bees.
Wasps.
Yes. Wasps.
Locusts.
Horseflies.
Okay. Let's slow down here.
Dragonflies?
No. Hold on. I feel like
spiders.
They're not even insects.
They're close enough, aren't they?
No, not at all. No.
Moths? Sorry.
So
butterfly.
Bed bugs? Okay, right.
Bed bugs.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry, bed entomons.
Insect and bug are actually... we'll get into what insects and bugs are in a second.
Oh, okay.
So, Hymenoptera, it includes wasps, bees, and ants. It's very big, obviously.
Ooh,
because there are a ton of ants.
Are ants so just, like, similar... So that means ants are kind of similar to bees and wasps, just without wings, most of them.
I mean, evolutionarily, yes.
Wow.
And interestingly, I found this out the other day, actually, that apparently... bees are modified wasps that like lost their ability to sort of, what was it? I think they lost their ability to sting.
Bastards.
to sting as hard as wasps.
Yeah,
right.
Bees are just like soft wasps, basically.
Hang on. So the wasp existed first,
right?
And
I
then
did not
the bee
that.
Attached its sting to most of its internal organs as an evolutionary development.
Yeah, because they're softer.
They're fuzzy little guys.
Yeah. They survived by loving each other and not stinging.
Oh, so sorry. No, hold on. I think I've got this a little bit. I've got this a little bit mixed up here. I'll repeat, but more correctly. So what I'd actually heard, and again, don't take this as fact because I'm not sure where I heard it from, but it does seem to be corroborated somewhere online. Bees
on lies.com.
On lies, yes. It's just full of lies. That's where I find all the information for this podcast. So bees are essentially, they did a panda. So they were hunting wasps. Yeah, they did a panda. I'll explain. This makes sense. They were hunting wasps that apparently went vegetarian because they got a taste for nectar. That sort of thing. Yeah. So that is an idea, sort of hypothesis.
So are wasps carnivores?
Yeah.
Really?
Are you kidding me? Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know what wasps eat.
Oh my god, no, wasps are like super carnivores. They're horrific.
Oh.
No, you don't want to, like, oh god. Wasps will, like, I think wasps can lay eggs in other insects and have their larvae hatch out and eat the insects.
So they're literally alien from the movie Aliens.
I suppose they are. Yeah. Wasps also can lay eggs. Have you heard the wasp fig thing?
Wasp fig thing.
Basically, figs are not vegan because they contain little baby insects.
I mean, yeah.
Right.
So wasps can lay their eggs in figs, and they're supposed to sort of burrow out. The larvae supposed to burrow out and then turn into wasps and fly away. But like, I think there can still be some sort of wasps that turn into the fig. Hold on. If it's a male fig, then the eggs are laid in the fig. And then they crawl out. But if it's a female fig, she'll pollinate it, lay her eggs in, and then die there.
Figs have sex?
Plants have sex.
I thought plants were just all most or at least mostly like sex, both sexes.
They can't. Okay, so plants are weird.
We're getting a real biology lesson
This is very
anatomy of a fig.
When I talk about something as large as this, what's really difficult is that I can't say anything.
Yeah.
Because as soon as I say something, there's something else that doesn't quite do that.
Yeah.
So please don't be in the comments trying to correct me with... What I'm going to say here is that plants can sort of either reproduce asexually or sexually.
Mm-hmm.
Not all plants can do all of those things. I don't think off the top of my head. But there are male parts to plants and female parts to plants.
Yeah,
right.
The female parts to plants are what become fruits. The ovaries of the plant become fruit. That's, I think, sort of biological definition of a fruit.
Yeah.
So that's what it's talking about. A male fig and a female fig is essentially sort of, I think, a female part of the fig. Although I don't know very much about figs. It could literally just be that there are like specific parts of the plant that are actually just female.
Right.
I don't actually know. We can look into this and do something about it, but I don't know. All I know is that wasps lay eggs in figs, and sometimes they just die in there.
And then you eat them.
Do they have a preference for either sex of fig? Are they like, they lay more in the female figs?
I mean, if they lay in the female figs, they die. The female figs are the ones that
kill
them.
Maybe they prefer male figs.
Maybe they probably...
Oh, that's the nice fig.
Sure, so I'm just reading this here from the BBC. Certain types of figs are male and female, and so require a special breed of wasp to pollinate the females. So, yeah, in this case, you've got certain types of figs. Some are male, some are females. The males, they sort of crawl through. They sort of crawl in, they lay their eggs, and they can fly away. The females, they crawl through a hole so small, their wings come off, and they get trapped. And this is...
That's horrible.
Yeah. Oh, God. I think... Yeah, so I think the wasp dies in there regardless. Maybe. It's not very clear here. But what it seems to say is essentially that the male fig is where you lay your eggs, and the female fig, you pollinate it, but you can't lay your eggs and you just die.
You just alone. Die there.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. So don't eat figs if you like wasps, I guess. But entomology and Hymenoptera, that's what we're talking about. So Justin Schmidt is an entomologist, specifically studying Hymenoptera. Wasps, bees, and ants, all those lovely stinging insects that we love oh so much. He started developing the Schmidt Sting Pain Index. There are a bunch of different names that are used for it. The Schmidt Pain Index, the Schmidt Pain Scale, the Schmidt Sting Pain Index and Scale, all of that. I'm going to use them interchangeably. Okay. So he began developing that in 1983. We've got a quote from him. We've got a few quotes from him today because I like him. He said, "I carried out my first experiment with a stinging insect when I was 7, picking a honeybee off a dandelion and placing it onto the arm of my teacher. My hypothesis was that it might sting her, and it turned out to be correct, much to her dismay." This is from an interview with The Guardian.
Unethical, by the way.
In 2018.
What a psychopath. Yes. Normally you hear these stories of scientists experimenting on themselves, not getting their teacher and just sticking a little bug near it. And
miss,
going,
come here for
a minute. Are you telling me there aren't any teachers that you would have wanted to just sting with a bee?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Plenty.
Yeah. Oh, I don't think I have much angst towards any of my teachers. Even the bad ones or the not nice ones were probably just unhappy.
I know for a fact that some of my not nice teachers were actually just really mean people. Just like, yeah. Just the worst. Just like, I actually had I had a chemistry teacher that was full on like Severus Snape level. I'm not even joking. And he didn't have the excuse of like, you know, wanting to have banged one of the kid there's mums. He didn't have that excuse even. He was just a bitter
guy. And we
guy.
All know that's a great excuse. You know,
it's up there.
Oh, right.
It's up there with like not fighting Wizard Hitler, number one, because you had a 2-month-long relationship many, many years ago. That's Dumbledore's reason for not fighting.
Well, but he's got like a magic pact or something.
No, I don't. Sorry. No. The Fantastic Beasts films, I do not take as canon because they are so stupid. I have not seen. Okay, so I found out the other day, by the way, that Fantastic Beasts 2, I had seen. Yeah. I thought I hadn't seen it because it's so forgettable. And then someone was like,
not
I think
much
it was you two
it.
That I was talking about.
Yeah, 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 it was us.
Yeah, wherein you said, oh, yeah, so this happens at the start and the end of the second film. And I'm like, I guess I've seen that entire film. Can't tell you a single thing that happens in it, but I know how it starts and ends because it's terrible.
I know the start and the end. I can't remember anything in the middle.
Probably for the best. The less you remember about those films, the better.
I know the Philosopher's Stone and Nicholas Flamel pop up somewhere.
Weird.
Yeah.
Weird. No, yeah. No need. No need for that weird old man. Oh, loved him, though.
Grindelwald kills a baby. I remember that.
What is it with J.K. Rowling and writing baby killing into her stories?
A baby on the floor, and he looks at it and just Avada Kedavra's it. I mean, it's just a baby.
Of all ways to kill a baby, I feel like that's probably... That's
Where
my preferred
that baby's
way.
Mother to die to save it?
Right?
Oh, dead on the floor. I think, oh, wait, yeah, hold on. Oh, I think there were muggles.
He kills a muggle baby.
I think that's it's,
like,
yeah.
Like, that is the most defenseless kind
it's
of
like
baby.
Stamping on a kitten. Like, why would you do that?
But seriously, those films, I've disregarded them as canon because I found out from someone that went to watch them, to review them, to tell people, don't watch this. I've seen it. I'm telling you it's bad. And they were saying that apparently all of these films up until this point are still before the Second World War.
Yeah.
As in, still before Grindelwald's actual rise to power.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we've just watched, like, we've seen there are three films which detail not even the interesting part of the story, which makes sense because they're Fantastic Beasts films, not...
Yeah. You know what's funny? Films. Fantastic Beasts 4 and 5 haven't been greenlit yet, and it's completely dependent on how the third one does, and the third one is flopping.
Well, so I mean...
They may not actually get to doing the Second World War.
Every single... like, almost every single actor in that has had some kind of controversy.
Yeah.
It's just, they are plagued with bad luck when it comes to that. Yeah, it's not good. Okay. Shall we get back to the stinging?
Let's get back onto some other things that are extremely painful.
Yeah, where does Fantastic Beasts rate on the Schmidt Index?
Actually, it broke the index.
Schmidt is now dead.
Seriously, I'm genuinely considering, because I know what the worst, I know what the worst sting on this index is, not personally, but I've heard descriptions, and I'm sitting here thinking, would I rather sit through all Fantastic Beasts films back to back, or go through the pain of that worst sting?
I tell you, the worst sting I've ever had was going to the Fantastic Beasts 1 premiere and seeing J.K. Rowling there on my way in and being like, oh my god, that's the person that wrote my favourite books ever. And then seeing Fantastic Beasts 1 and then seeing J.K. Rowling again and going, oh.
That's the woman that wrote my least favourite film ever. Forgetting all the transphobia for a second.
Was she transphobic then, when the first one was out? As in, was she out?
She's been liking tweets for a while.
Well, I didn't know at the time, hadn't entered into my brain properly. And so I was very happy to see her, and then I left and I was very sad.
Little did you know Fantastic Beasts 2 would be worse.
I mean, I'm glad that the films are bad. I am glad, because imagine if she was really, really good at writing.
Yeah.
That would be...
That would be so annoying.
Oh, yeah, I'd be like, oh man, I'm missing out on all of this. But let's get back to the stings, please, because it is more bearable than this conversation. So, as I said, Justin Schmidt stung his teacher with a bee, which, by the way, is, if you think about this as well... He murdered a little bee.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. This isn't ethical.
I know, right? Like, forget the teacher, but that little bee?
That poor little bee.
Luke murdered a bee once.
No, you did murder a bee once. Again. Don't bring this up again.
Bring what up again, Luke? Tell me. What am I not to bring up?
Okay. I didn't mean to. It's man's... At best, it's bee slaughter. Okay? At worst, it's bee slaughter.
I feel like manslaughter does sort of... It does sort of it takes the edge off of murder, right?
Yeah.
Bee slaughter sounds worse than murder, I think.
Yeah. Bee murder.
Bee slaughter is just God, what did you do to that bee?
So basically, I grew up hearing of this story that if you take a bee, if you get a bee and you put it in the freezer, then it falls asleep. And then when you warm it back up again, you can tie a little string around it. And then you have a little pet bee on a string. And I thought, wow, this is really interesting. I'd love to do this. But then I forgot that I'd put the bee in the freezer.
Luke, can you just tell everyone how old you were when you did this?
Oh, I was like 22, 23.
Yeah.
I didn't know you when you were 22.
Okay, maybe 24?
I think you were about 24.
But
in my defense...
Now, I'm not 24 yet.
I was unperturbed by my failure, so I did it again. And the second time, it succeeded, and I had little bee on a string.
So after you killed one bee, you were like, let's do it again.
Well, I just kept track of the bee that time. And also, in my defense, when I unfroze the first bee, it was still alive a little bit. And then
so it died slowly.
It died.
It was almost Captain America bee version.
I didn't give this bee a quick death. I tortured this bee.
I'm sorry. I'll meet that bee in the afterlife and I'll give it a hug.
I think it's... I don't think
it's going to sting you.
I'll give it some nectar. I'll love that.
I think it's really rich for you to condemn Justin Schmidt for getting his teacher stung when you fully tortured and murdered
a poor defenseless bee. He did it deliberately. I was just trying to have a pet bee on a string.
You didn't even figure anything out scientifically from your bee slaughter.
He was 7. You were much older.
Let me be.
You were over triple his age.
So, do you know what the difference between insects, bugs, and arachnids are?
Is it the number of legs?
Okay, that's
for arachnids and Oh, yeah. We have bugs and insects. They're different.
So bug is just a general word that we use for anything that's kind of
creepy.
Right. So spiders could be bugs.
Spiders are bugs. Insects are bugs. Even, you know, worms are bugs to an extent. You kind of think about a bug's life. Think about all the different bugs in a bug's life.
Yeah, true.
You know, it's like a society of many different species living together in harmony.
And I believe that bug's life is the standard by which scientists use to classify what are bugs and what are not bugs.
We're not going
to
use ants, are we?
Is it in a bug? Ants? Oh, no.
Yeah, no, a bug's life. A bug's life is pretty solid.
Is a bug an actual classification, or is it just a colloquialism?
No, it's a sort of... it's kind of like fish, I guess.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You wouldn't necessarily use it in science, but it's just how we refer to all of these kind of things if we want to say bugs.
Creepy things. Okay, that's nice.
Yeah, and it's just very broad, and it doesn't mean very much on its own. It's one of those things where you know what a bug is, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
Just like you know what soup is.
Oh, hold on. I'm dead wrong. I've just Googled this, and I am correct in saying that sort of colloquially, bug does mean anything.
Okay.
But there is apparently a sort of strict scientific definition to it, which I was unaware of. So it's an insect in the group Hemiptera. Do you know what Hemiptera might mean?
That sounds
translated
like...
from the Greek.
Oh, like two sides.
So, ptera, like helicopter.
Oh,
or...
in the ground, in the earth.
No, wing.
No. Oh! Yeah. So spiders aren't bugs.
No. So, spiders aren't bugs. So if we're talking strictly using this strict biological definition, it's an insect in the group Hemiptera, which means it's going to have piercing mouth parts.
Wow. So bugs are a subcategory of insects, not insects being a subcategory of bugs.
So this is the difference between bug in a sort of strict scientific context and bug in a colloquial context.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the cicadas, for example, are in Hemiptera. Hemi meaning, I believe, so half, and
they're a scientific bug.
Yeah, they're
and they're also they're also a colloquial. Bugs. Yeah.
So that's the difference between bug.
That'd be a fun game show. Is it a colloquial bug or is it a scientific bug?
I just had an awesome idea for.
We can call it Bug Off.
I just had an awesome idea. We could do that. We could do that in SciGuys Live. Let's do that in SciGuys Live, our monthly live show that we have.
That's such a good idea.
We could possibly play.
But we could all. You could also do it for sort of fruits and nuts and all of these, because there's botanical. There's sort of botanical fruits and botanical nuts, and then there's culinary fruits and culinary nuts.
And we could do fruits and vegetables. Is it a fruit or is it a vegetable?
See, that is... It depends on the definition. It all fits in. Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Could be a berry. Is a berry a fruit?
A berry is a subsection of fruit, I believe.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I thought they're a separate thing.
Yeah. A berry... So I think, strictly speaking, a berry needs... Is, gosh.
It's a nice little hat that French people wear.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. I actually don't remember the exact definition of a berry, but I do know that a lot of the things that we call berries are not berries.
Right.
Yeah, they're like sun caps.
Aren't bananas technically berries?
Yes, so I think a berry has... It's one fruit with multiple seeds. So apples are berries, bananas are berries, but I think the seeds need to be internal. Raspberries are not berries because they are individual little droplet-y fruits that are, you know, like that.
About strawberries? They're on the outside.
I'm not sure on strawberries because they are on the outside.
Yeah.
Blueberries, I'm pretty sure, are berries. Anyway, why don't we get back to insects instead of talking about fruits instead of it.
Not berries.
So, so insects, bugs, and arachnids. Bugs, strictly scientifically speaking, are a subset of insects. Arachnids are related to insects. They're not hugely different, but they're not insects. Arachnids have sort of eight limbs, and there's a few other differences as well. But sort of spiders, scorpions, those would be arachnids.
Yes.
And insects are they have six limbs.
And octopuses are arachnids.
I think insects have to have six limbs. But no, octopuses are not arachnids.
They have eight legs though.
They do have eight legs. They have eight legs. Yes, they do.
Yeah, they do.
Jeez, okay.
I'm right. Thank you.
I'm going to move on from the differences between these things because
cool. Probably for the best.
If you want to know the actual differences, you can Google them. They're actually very easy to understand. It's just that most people aren't aware of them.
Yeah.
So treating insect stings. I just want to quickly go over that before we get into the actual Smith pain index. So have you ever been stung by an insect?
Yes.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Oh, no, not in a while.
Yeah. No, yeah. Because I mean, I don't really get stung ever.
I've been bitten by ants. I've been bitten by horseflies. Yeah, ants are not.
Midges.
Don't get bitten by them.
What?
Because you're vegan.
I think they're racist. I've never been I've honestly never been bothered by being bitten by insects. I remember one insect bite in my life.
I heard that if you don't drink milk, then you're less likely to get bitten by midges. And also, if you don't drink alcohol, you're less likely to be bitten by midges. But I don't know if that's true.
I didn't know
when
midges
I was a child,
could bite.
So I was you were drinking both milk and alcohol. And together, actually, because my favorite drink was a White Russian.
What? Oh, you're not joking.
No, I was drinking alcohol and milk together.
Wow,
yeah.
What a life you've lived.
Oh, fantastic life.
That's nice, isn't it? Oh, so, mosquitoes, of course. Been plenty of mosquitoes.
Never been bitten by a mosquito.
Wow.
Never. I've been bitten by one mystery insect once on my leg, and that was horrific.
The one non-racist insect.
The one, yeah, you know, it's an ally.
I'm also convinced...
I'll bite you, don't worry. I'm not prejudiced.
I'm also convinced I've been bitten by spiders, but not bad ones.
Not in Australia, hopefully.
Yeah, but not bad ones.
Jesus. I mean, a not bad one in Australia is like, well, you go to hospital. You don't die.
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah. Yeah.
So, insect stings are actually usually fine. I mean, unless they're very, very... I mean, okay, we're saying insects as well. So spider, I mean, but let's say like...
Colloquial bug stings.
Colloquial bug sting.
Yeah.
Yes.
So the Schmidt-Pain insect is... the Schmidt-Pain index is... about sort of, I think, just insect stings. At least I've only seen insects on there. But yeah, just generally to treat an insect sting, it's not hugely an issue unless the insects are specifically very bad, which they usually aren't.
Yeah.
I don't even know off the top of my head if there are any insects with sort of bites strong enough to actively harm you seriously, unless...
Malaria.
That's not the insect bite, though.
No, I know. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's like, yeah, you know what I mean?
But the difference is... is negligible when you now have malaria.
Yeah, I suppose true. Yes. I cannot dispute that. But yeah, no, unless you're having an allergic reaction, usually insect bites are fine. They're just itchy and red and all that
not
stuff.
Right.
But yeah, no, if you're coughing or tickling at your throat or tightness in your chest or sweating or anxiety or hives over a huge area of your body, you're probably having an allergic reaction and you should go to the hospital because you could die.
Yeah.
You don't want to do that.
No.
You don't
That's the aim.
So those are insect stings. They're usually fine. Do you know why they might sting?
They do a little vomit in you, don't they?
Which ones?
Bugs.
Colloquial bugs.
Yeah. I mean, not all insects.
I put a little bit of poison in you.
A little bit of venom.
Wow,
yeah.
Cool.
A little bit, yeah.
Venom.
Yeah,
yes.
Venom. Because it's being injected. Yeah. But do you know why they sting? But why sort of insects and whatnot sting? Oh, can I just say that we're going to be saying bugs here. We're not talking about scientific bugs. We're going to be talking about
colloquial bugs.
Yeah. Why they sting?
Is it to digest food? No.
As in why? Sorry, why they sting you, or why they sting?
Right.
Why a sting? A bite stings.
So I mean, why do insects have stings?
Why do they have venom? Do they have venom?
To like get you away.
There's two. Yeah, I mean, there's two main things: it's defense and predation. Really.
Yeah.
So you guys kind of touched on the defense,
okay.
But also predation.
I thought too much. I thought maybe it was an enzyme for digesting them.
No. I mean, it could have been how it evolved. Yeah. I don't know how they've evolved. Just to say that essentially, to the reason that they sting is to kill stuff that they want to eat, or incapacitate stuff that they want to eat, or tell other stuff that might want to eat them, stay away from me.
Go the hell away.
Or I'm going to hurt you. Like, you've seen dogs' faces after they've got, like, wasp stings and stuff. Like,
they're all swollen. It's so fun.
Ding-a-ling-ling, it's the ad bell. What are we advertising today?
We're advertising our spicy merch. I am wearing the tardigrade beanie that we're selling. It's a little tardigrade boy, little water bear going, ooh.
And if you like the tardigrade beanie, you could also get our matching tardigrade t-shirt with a little smiling tardigrade that isn't going ooh, but is going ee.
And if you like the tardigrade t-shirt, you might also like the Sci Guys little pin badges we've made.
Wow.
They don't match, but they do say Sci Guys, and you can show your love for Sci Guys in your pin badge collection, and they're very cute.
Yeah, it's the actual logo.
And there's still a chance to grab our Sci Guys calendar, which will give you a discount on the future calendar if you get it now.
And an extra episode of Sci Guys, all about calendars.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah, they will get
calendar
that.
Calendar episode, yeah.
Well, that's the spawn from ourselves. Back to the episode.
So, this Schmidt-Pain Index, it actually won an Ig Nobel Prize.
Mm.
Did it?
It did. Do you know what an Ig Nobel Prize is?
It's like the Nobel Prizes. So, it's a scientific award for high achievement. usually for something you've researched. But it's some an Ig Nobel Prize is specifically something weird, like a weird research study thing that makes you laugh. But then when you actually think about it, it's really interesting. Like you've actually discovered something.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. It makes you laugh. And it makes you think.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so this won for physiology and entomology in 2015, but it was jointly awarded, and we'll cover the other winner that won that same year in a bonus episode this month.
It just doesn't seem funny enough to, like, warrant being an Ig Nobel thing.
Well, it would be like man stings himself with 1,000 different bugs.
Oh,
stings
Jeff, his teacher. We're getting into this. No, it,
we
it
haven't touched the surface.
Okay, it fully deserves to win an Ig Nobel Prize.
Okay, fine.
This man is... amazing. Okay. And it's ridiculous. He definitely deserves it. So we want to talk about a little bit why it was made, obviously. So he grew up in an area of the US that had a bunch of wasps and whatnot, and so obviously he was interested in that from a young age. He went on to study them, but he was stung by basically every kind of bee and wasps in his area as a kid, and he was like, oh, this all hurts the same. You know, it doesn't, the sort of, the intensity might vary between them, and this is a direct quote. As a kid, I was stung by virtually all of them. I realized that they registered the same sort of pain. The intensity may vary from one to the next, but they were fairly similar. But an accidental run-in with a colony of harvester ants led to a life-changing revelation. They didn't all feel as I expected they would. They really hurt. It's again from that Guardian interview in 2018. And then with Guinness World Records, I believe, because I think he's been stung by the most different kinds of insects, potentially. I don't know off the top of my head. He said, I wanted to find out whether the most painful stings are also the ones that can do the most damage. We could already measure the damage a sting inflicts by a variety of different methods, but we had no meaningful way to measure the pain. And I thought that was really interesting, because essentially, if we only measure the sort of damage done by insects, we're missing out on so much like important key data, because pain and damage don't always match up, right? If you think about it, like a paper cut hurts so much. Like, I would rather sort of, like, I've taken sort of the front off of, like, you know, parts of my finger, you know, just like the skin has just come away and I've not noticed, but you notice a paper cut.
Yeah.
You know, like, it really, really hurts.
Yeah. It's almost like having a sting is like a way of manipulating over long periods of time. It's like a way of manipulating evolution in your favor, in that you're not actually strong or big enough to do anything about your own survival compared to something that might hurt you, but you're convincing that thing to not hurt you, even though there's no real incentive for it to not do that.
Yeah. Wait, you're fully right. Yeah, that is exactly why a lot of stingy insects have those sort of very bold and vivid colors. Things that are poisonous or sort of you know, venomous tend to be very brightly colored or very obvious. Yeah. Sort of aposematic sort of coloration. Yeah. Wasps, for example, have those bright yellow stripes on the black, and you can see a wasp. And then you've got hoverflies who then go ahead and say, well, no one's bothering them wasps, I guess I'll wear the same outfit. And like, you look at a hoverfly next to a picture of a wasp and you're like, these don't look the same. They don't look the same at all. They look quite different. But then you see people going absolutely nuts because they're about to be stung by a wasp. And it's literally just a hoverfly, you know, sitting about. You've seen a hoverfly,
well, because
right?
If you just see the flash of yellow, you're like, okay, I'm not sticking around to find out
exactly
what that actually is.
It's like branding.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
It's
like
branding.
And it works. And that's what I think is incredible. You know, when you see something that has sort of camouflage that works on us.
Yeah.
Because, okay, so we tend to see sort of, say, for example, leopards and lions and all of these other sort of big cats and whatnot that have these colorations that help them blend in. We tend to see them... not in their sort of normal environment, right? Mm-hmm. We see them lounging around and all that stuff. We don't see them in the environment where their coloration is useful.
Because they're disguised.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And when we're... Exactly.
No.
Wait, no, what? No, hold on.
Because we don't go there.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
But also, if we did, they'd be disguised.
There's like a lion here right now. You don't know.
That's true.
Mm. Yeah, it could be.
Well,
it's the color of the wall.
Yeah. Yeah. Chameleon.
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 Yes. Ah.
No, but, you know, and whenever we're watching documentaries, they're specifically focusing in on these animals so that we can see them. But, like, I've seen pictures that where it says, oh, there's a leopard here, or there's a jaguar here, or there's some animal here, find it. And I'm sitting there, like, for a minute, and I'm like, Man, I'd be dead.
I saw one recently where it was like a cliffside and it was like, there is a leopard in this photo.
That one.
Took me 5 minutes. I was like, I cannot find it for the life of me.
Yeah, I often think about this when I'm looking at like, if you look at like chameleons or you look at like the certain type of octopuses that can conceal themselves. And you look at it and you're like, that's actually not very good. It's not particularly good at actually, but it's because you know it's there. And it's, if you think that it's not a good concealment, it's, you don't understand your own perceptual system, because if you didn't know it was there, it wouldn't stand out to you. It's just enough that when you're not necessarily looking for it, you would glance over it and it wouldn't stand out to your sort of wide band attentional system that's just sort of scanning the environment vaguely as opposed to honing in.
No, but that's the thing. When we look at chameleons, we know we're looking at a chameleon. When, you know, that video of the mimic octopus switching between all of its different little octopus forms.
Yes.
I'm gonna be a flounder. I'm gonna be a stingray. I'm gonna be a sea snake. You know,
I'm gonna be some sand.
And that video, you watch it and you're like, oh wow, that's really cool that it can look like that.
Yeah.
Doesn't look like a sea snake though. It's like when you see someone that's got a really good cosplay, but they don't look. You don't look like the film character, but the cosplay is really well made.
Yeah.
You know, it's exactly like that. Except, if you were to just glance at that octopus, you're not going to look in the sea and be like, oh man, that snake-looking thing? That might be it. You know that you're looking at an octopus, so it's not going to trick you as much. But, like, as you said, if you're just glancing at it, you're gonna see snake, or see stingray, or see another animal that you don't want to mess with.
Yeah.
Although, to be fair, I wouldn't want to mess with an octopus either. They're
horrible.
Too many legs.
Yeah.
Sticky. Oh, no, smart as well.
Yeah.
I feel like an octopus. I have a list of animals in my head, I guess, that could probably kill me. And octopus is on there. I say, okay, could probably kill me. I feel like there are a list of animals that I think I could beat. And they're kind of like ordered.
You're
from
such
like
such a man.
But like the most, like most able to beat, disgusting, to least able to beat. And I feel
what
like
could I beat up.
Genuinely, I feel like I'd rather go up against a bear than an octopus.
Because you're in the water. Does that factor in?
Yeah, I'm out of my element.
Yeah.
A bear, I reckon under the right circumstances, I could kill a bear.
But what's the octopus going to do to you?
Grab on my face.
Well, ink you in the face first of all, so you can't see. And then they've got eight arms to like just keep punching.
You could scare a bear off.
Punching you.
You could scare
a
bear off.
No bones, Jem.
Yeah, but they can wrap around and strike. Like, yeah. I feel like I could scare a bear off, or with the right weapon, I could stab a bear.
Yeah.
I don't disagree with you that technically an octopus maybe could do some things to you, but I just think it's much more likely it's just going to swim away.
Oh, no, but I mean, okay.
Whereas a bear is less likely to just flee.
Okay, so I'm saying if an animal is coming towards you, so a bear is charging down at you, right?
Yeah.
Depending on the kind of bear, if you make yourself big enough, the bear is going to get scared and go away, right? Mm. With an octopus, if that thing has decided to come for me, I feel like it's going to come for me. They're smart. You know, once it knows that
it can beat
me. But
they're also squidgy. You can just rip it up.
Oh, yeah, but that's the thing. They're squidgy, so you try and grab it, and it just...
But it's not easy under the water. It just slips away. It's
exactly. Right. And I'm on a time limit as well.
Well, yeah. I'm on the side of fighting an octopus rather than fighting a bear.
All right, well, then I'll fight a bear, and you fight an octopus, and we'll see who comes out.
Yeah, great. What a shame we're both vegan.
And also, this is clearly why I'm banned from the zoo.
Because you beat up all the bears.
Killed too many bears. Yeah.
He's been practicing. That's why he's happy to fight the bear.
Yeah.
He's not yet banned from the aquarium.
Too scared to go there. So back to the scale, the actual scale itself. Do you know what it runs from? Like how you'd measure something on the scale?
It's not, is it 0 to 10?
No, it's actually 1 to 4.
Oh.
What?
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So there's not halves or fractions.
No, it's just 1 to 4.
Oh, okay.
1, 2, 3, and
it's
4.
Not very many definitions of pain, then.
No, these TikToks have lied to me.
Have they?
Yeah.
What have they said to you?
It's always out of 10. It's always like pain out of 10.
I'm thinking, when I think about this, and I'm surprised by this, I'm thinking of the one about spiciness of sauces.
Oh, bells or something. Yeah, that's a little bit different.
It's kind of similar, though.
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder how much
2 million on.
Do you think it would sting a lot to get hot sauce? Like, I mean, obviously it would hurt to get anything injected in you, but do you think it would sting to get hot sauce injected in?
Well, it all depends on whether it's like inflammatory, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, do you want to try it?
Probably.
No.
I've got hot sauce and needles.
But have you got training as a nurse?
Don't need training as a nurse. I've stabbed people with needles before.
Testosterone,
yeah.
Okay, right.
I could do the whole thing.
Yeah, to be fair.
Yeah.
So have I.
Exactly.
All right.
So Jamp and I are both qualified.
Yeah, we'll both inject each other and I'll watch.
No, we can't inject each other because that would harm our injection. We'll inject you, both of us.
One arm each.
Yeah, different hot sauces.
Yeah. We'll get a Nando's. One of each sauce.
Yeah, we'll get the mild, we'll get the lemon and herb, the medium, and what's it? Extra hot.
That's one way to get a black card from Nando's. No, I think the extra hot is the hottest. Yeah. Definitely.
I thought that was one more.
No, yeah. I think it's the hottest. Anyway, this isn't a Nando's podcast. This is
a podcast.
So the scale runs from 1 to 4. Honeybees and wasps are rated at about a 2. I say about a 2. They're rated at a 2. The reason that it's 1 to 4 is because, have you ever been to the hospital and they've said, how is your pain out of 10? And they've got that little chart of all the little faces that show you what your face would be like if it's
I've never seen that.
Okay, no. You go to the hospital, you've got a pain from like sort of, I think 0 to 10, or really 1 to 10, because they assume that you are in pain if you're, you know, being asked about your pain. 10 is the worst pain of your life. Yeah, 0 is mild discomfort.
What if you've lived a very sheltered life?
Exactly. I think this is, and let me just go on a little rant here, okay?
Okay.
Let me go on a little tangent, because I've got some thoughts, okay?
Have you?
About this pain scale that doctors use.
Corey's most nuclear take about the NHS pain scale.
It doesn't work well, because I gauge my pain based on what pain I've had in my life. The worst pain I've had in my life may not be the worst pain I'll ever have in my life. You have no idea what people have experienced. And I can't conceptualize the worst pain ever. Because, like, the worst pain ever to me is, like, oh, it shuts. Like, I just shut down. Mm. Right? Like, I've had 2 experiences where I've been in, like, incredible, incredible pain. But I was a child. I don't remember that. I don't remember what it, like, actually feels like.
Yeah.
And when I'm feeling pain, okay, like, yes, oh, this hurts. But, like, does it really hurt? Because pain is, like, almost subjective. It can, like, you can kind of get to ignoring it with certain levels of pain. And so then you're like, okay, well, I suppose I wouldn't be able to ignore anything above a 5. So if I'm able to ignore this, then is it a below a 5? But sometimes it's much worse. And also it comes and goes. Like, putting pain on a number. And also, we can't do 1 to 10 easily.
I think you're overthinking it, man.
No.
When they ask me, a number just appears in my mind and I go, 7.
Yeah.
And make it up.
That's usually about 7.
But if say, for example, somebody who's male says 7 and somebody who's female says 7, do they account for the fact that females generally have a higher pain tolerance?
I don't know if they do, probably subconsciously. They definitely do when it comes to black people.
Do they have a higher pain tolerance?
No, that is a medical myth that doctors think.
Yeah.
Doctors think that black people have a higher pain tolerance, and that results in a number of not very good things.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Why?
What do you mean?
Why do they think that?
Racism, Jamp.
Like, surely they have. What, it's just
it,
like,
because
like,
just the idea
is.
I feel
like after you've enslaved a group of people for a while, like you can make
like,
up any.
With the women thing, like, oh, it's because they're childbirth and whatever. But okay, I'm just.
Is it because of like the idea of like the? I don't want to get into racial stereotypes. Is it like the macho thing, or like the black people run really fast thing, or like that sort of
warrior gene thing?
Warrior
maybe.
Gene thing, yeah.
I don't know the exact. I don't know the thing for it, but it is this sort of too commonly held belief amongst doctors. I mean, even sort of subconscious, like, you know, that black people have a higher pain tolerance. They can take more pain. And it's... Oh,
they've
no,
just had
no
more
point
pain.
Up. Right?
They didn't want it.
They can take it. They've been through a lot. Now, genetically speaking, like, they could probably pass that down, right?
So does that mean that they, if a black person says, like, I'm a 7, they assume it's more pain?
I don't. You're asking me to.
Yeah, I don't
you're
know.
Asking me to. I don't know. What
I just
all
mean, how does it
do.
Manifest itself, or is it just a general belief that some people have?
I guess one could hypothesize that it would manifest itself in more sort of painkillers and anesthetic. So you're like, oh, I don't need to give this guy as much painkillers because he can handle it.
See, I wrongfully assumed it would be the other way, which is like if somebody who's black is reporting a lot of pain, then you think that that's even more pain. Because you have this idea that they can put up with more pain. And so if they're saying 7, it's actually like a white person 8. So you've got to really take it seriously.
Man, I think you're thinking of Scobells again. You're thinking of that chili. Like,
you take a lot more spice.
Just take so much. That would be that. But the reason that the scale runs from 1 to 4, I kind of touched on it in my little thing about the pain scale, is that from 1 to 10... That's too many for you to keep your head in. 1 to 4, That is really easy.
Nice, right? And concise.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because we can't really do, if you think about it, we can't do much more than things out of five.
Yeah.
Generally. You know, and like,
yeah, too many options.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like rating, when someone rates a film, I mean, I guess rating films or whatever out of 10 is kind of useful, but there's a reason that most rating systems are just five.
Unless you go on Just Eat, where it's out of six now.
What?
Yeah. Why? It's out of six stars.
But then there's no middle average.
Yeah. You're
either good or bad.
I think it's because it bumps everything up a little bit.
Yeah, that's so odd.
So something that used to be like four stars is now four and a bit stars.
So back to this index. There is a four-point scale, as I've said. It records how much... So this is a quote from Dr. Justin Schmidt himself. The index records how much pain an insect sting causes so that we can make scientific comparisons between different species' stings. I chose the four-point scale because it's hard to distinguish between levels of pain in finer detail on a 10-point scale, say. That was his interview with the Guinness Book of World Records. So, you know...
What was his record for?
I think it was, as I said, I think it was being stung by the most insects.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I thought probably. Yeah.
So, most different kinds of insects.
Yeah.
I've been stung by so many bees all at once.
Trust me, I have.
I mean, he's done the pain scale, you know. I mean, I don't know if he actually has a world record. I'm just saying the interview was with the Guinness Book of World Records.
Yeah, right.
Or Guinness World Records, rather. So, yeah, I mean, this makes sense. You know, it's when it comes to differentiating between, you know, a 100-point scale, the difference between 4 and 5 is... You don't know the difference between that, honestly.
Yeah, yeah.
A 10-point scale, you could maybe tell the difference, but it's with pain, it's really, really tough. So you're stuck with a 4-point scale. It makes sense. So the scale itself is compiled in the 2016 book, The Sting of the Wild. It includes 83 stings, but he's now been stung by over 150 species of insect.
Oh,
yeah, it's mad.
Awful.
So the way that it works is that essentially what he does is he gives a 1 to 4 rating, and then that's only sort of half the story, because he also has a little sort of short qualitative review on the sting, or at least on most of them. So this is a quote from him saying, "One of my favorites is the Florida harvester ant, which, though it's not aggressive and almost has to be forced to sting someone, still achieves a 3 on the index. I describe the pain as bold and unrelenting. Somebody is using a power drill to excavate your ingrown toenail." Then there's the club-horned wasp, which is, it doesn't even like get to a 1. He says it doesn't even merit a 1. And he said it is disappointing. A paperclip falls on your bare foot. Imagine like being an entire species of wasp and just being completely destroyed by this guy.
Paperclip, like, yeah. Not even like an uncurled paperclip, just the weight of a paperclip,
not even like a thumbtack or something. Yeah. Like, just no, a blunt paperclip
falls on your bare foot. Funny. I mean, he did say that it is that is disappointing.
Yeah.
Which, for realistically, when it comes to an insect sting, I feel like if I've been stung by a club-horned wasp, I'd be like, wow, I'm really appointed that I've not been put in extreme pain by this wasp. But Justin Schmidt over here is like, nah, give me the pain. So
he's reviewing these like he's a food critic.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It's very descriptive.
The qualitative description. Yeah. I really like it.
Yeah. And you'd think that he got stung on purpose, right? Yeah. That's not actually the case. Because he's an entomologist, obviously, he gets stung quite a lot. I think he's got a sort of garage.
Oh, just by working around bugs.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he's got a sort of garage or like sort of shed just off his house where he's got a bunch of bugs in. I watched a sort of video interview. I think it's just off his house. But I think also his kids were helping with it. His wife really likes that he does it because it's fun and all that sort of stuff. He's only been sort of purposely stung by a few things. Or at least that's what he says.
Yeah.
But still, being stung by over 150. That's awful. Insane. So... We've spoken a little bit about the scale. Do you want to go through some things on the scale, maybe?
Yeah. What are the distinctions between all of the different ratings?
I mean,
are there like trends between like what qualifies as a 1 versus what qualifies as like a 4?
Just how much it hurts.
Yeah.
Like this is. I mean, I can't really sit here and explain to you like sort of.
But he hasn't like clearly. Okay, I'm just wondering.
Sit
if
there, and I'll punch you.
No,
you
I'm just wondering if he's stated like. The prerequisites.
So this
like...
is the qual. That's why the qualitative review is really useful.
Okay.
So let's say, a red fire ant, for example, that is pain level 1. Yeah. Okay. Now that is sharp, sudden, mildly alarming, like walking across a shag carpet and reaching for the light switch.
What?
And then you get a little shock.
Okay.
Little electric shock.
Little spike. Yeah. Okay.
And then you've still got pain level one. Let's go to the southern fire ant.
Yeah.
It happens on the third day as you reach for the light switch, and you're wondering when you will ever learn.
Wow, that's he's like back referencing his own reviews.
Right? Okay.
Interesting. Okay.
Then
I'm just worried because I thought maybe like tier four would be like, it must have like a burning feeling, cause inflammation. I was going to wonder like specific things.
Of this is about response.
Right.
So we've got a ton of data on the bodily response to all of these stings.
Yeah.
The entire purpose of the Schmidt Pain Index is to look at the pain.
Yeah.
So in that sense, you can't really put an objective sort of measure on this kind of, it has to be this kind of pain or that kind of pain.
Yeah.
It's really about how much does this hurt? Because, for example, like, you could have a burning sensation that is like fine. Like, you could have sort of a little bit of heartburn or something, and you're like,
Yeah.
Or acid reflux, and you're like, oh, that's a bit burny, but it's generally fine.
Yeah.
And then you can have another kind of pain where it's not burning pain, but it is excruciating, right? So, I mean, the kind of pain is almost irrelevant in terms of where it is on the scale. It's just the level. You know,
purely qualitative. There's nothing else.
No, so it's
just like how he experiences it.
Yeah, it's fully subjective.
Cool.
And then you've got the little qualitative sort of review to sort of give you a better idea of all of those sort of the actual experience of the pain, whether it's a sort of burning pain or whether it's that sort of sharp pain, all those different things.
Okay.
So we move to level two, which is the glorious velvet ant.
Ooh.
Instantaneous, like the surprise of being stabbed.
Oh.
Is this what shrapnel feels
like?
Is he
being stabbed?
No.
Because I've heard that being stabbed is actually surprisingly not that painful.
Apparently,
being
like
shot, actually. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, no, I think being shot can be quite painful. It depends where you're shot, obviously.
Yeah.
But being stabbed is, apparently, like, it can feel like being punched. You don't necessarily realize that you've been stabbed. And, I mean, the issue with stabbing someone is that you could, like, if you stab someone, they're not going to necessarily immediately go down.
Yeah.
And so you gotta keep doing it. Like, you gotta keep on going with that thing before they're like, boop, you know?
Oh, Lord.
Because people can get stabbed without really realizing it. I mean, especially if you're in that sort of high adrenaline situation, you can just be like, oh, they punched me. And then you're like, oh, no, I am bleeding, you know?
Yeah.
So let's move on to the Western Yellow Jacket, which is kind of like, I'm pretty sure yellow jackets are kind of like big angry wasps in the US.
Yeah.
And where else? Elsewhere? I don't know. We don't have them here, as far as I'm aware. Right?
I'm not sure if we have them in Australia. I don't know.
I want to be clear. Jab is from Australia.
I'm from
Australia. We're in the UK.
Yeah.
And I'm saying I don't think we've got.
I'm not there anymore.
I think that we have them here in Australia.
No, not here.
Oh, did I say here? Oh, that's right.
No. I don't think there are. The most commonly found wasp in the UK is the yellow jacket.
Oh, we do.
Yeah, so I guess.
Cool.
I guess we just don't call them yellow jackets, whereas Americans will tend to call them yellow jackets. Interesting. So
Americans do strange things like that.
Yeah, so the Western yellow jacket, it is a two. Hot and smoky, almost irreverent. Imagine W.C. Fields extinguishing a cigar on your tongue.
Ooh, that is painful.
Do you see why this deserves a...
What a jump between one and two.
Okay, right? I do see why this deserves an Ig Nobel now.
And then there's the Western honeybee. Again, it's a two. Burning, corrosive, but you can handle it. A flaming match head lands on your arm and is quenched with lye and then with sulfuric acid.
Oh.
That sounds sore.
Ouch.
I kind of want to be stung by a bee now just to see how it feels, because I feel like I remember it hurting a lot, but I was a kid and I feel like it would hurt more as a kid than it would as an adult.
I've always been intrigued because I've never been stung.
Really?
Yeah.
Let's get you stung.
Let's get me stung.
The thing about being stung is just the surprise. It's not even so much the pain, especially when it's something like a bee. It's just how shocking it is.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so let's go to the absolute worst. Do you have any idea what the absolute worst pain on this sting index is?
It's a type of ant.
Is it a specific? I was going to say like a fire ant or something.
Fire ant was one.
Oh, was it?
I think some kinds of fire ant are one. Yeah. But, okay.
But I also was going to say a type of fire ant I heard was like one of the top ones.
I'll read you a quote here. According to the index, the most painful insect sting of them all is that of the bullet ant of Central and South American rainforests. Dr. Schmidt has given an unmatched 4+ and describes the sensation of getting stung by one as like walking over flaming charcoal with a 3-inch rusting nail in your heel.
Ow.
Sounds like he really wanted a 6-part scale. Because he does say it's not even a 1 and a 4+. Or yeah. a 5-part scale. Yeah.
But I think that makes sense, though, right? Like, in that... You don't want a 10-point scale because then, or yeah. in a bigger scale because it's hard to get these finer details. But when you've got something that's like, oh, this almost shouldn't even be on the scale.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? It's not even pain.
And this is so painful that mm-hmm. like I want to differentiate between this 4 and the other 4 by saying this is like they're all a 4, but this one is like the worst pain ever.
Oh, ow.
And so bullet ants are actually really interesting because I'll just give you a few facts about these. So you might have heard of bullet ants before in the context of a sort of coming of age ritual. Have you heard of that before?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Do you remember?
I can't remember the details, but yeah, essentially, I mean, it's obvious from what Corey said, but essentially it's like you get bitten by this ant in order as a ritual of passing into adulthood, being a man, I think.
Yeah, so in the... I may butcher this pronunciation.
In a tribal setting.
Where does it bite you?
So in the Sateri Mawe people, the sort of Sateri Mawe tribe, I guess, or the Sateri Mawe people in Brazil, they use ant stings. Those ant stings to sort of mark you moving into adulthood. So what you need to do is essentially sort of boys will get together all of the bullet ants and then they're come on, basically ants. Sedated and put into gloves.
Oh.
So you've got a bunch of ants in gloves and all of their stingers are then like facing inwards to where to where you'd put your hand in. And then you've got to wear that glove 20 times before you're considered a warrior.
20 times in the course of a year or in the course of a day?
It just says 20 times.
Probably ever.
But yeah, in your life. I mean, you're not going to do it. You're not going to be going back for more. But the thing is that the reason they're called bullet ants is because apparently it feels like being shot. Like, it's the pain of being shot. That's why they're called bullet ants.
Wow.
Ow.
Yeah.
I wonder I'd love to know what that does. Because, like, obviously, there are these traditions in various areas of the world of like coming of age things and that sort of thing. I'd love to know if there's actually like what it does to you, what it does to your brain, what it does to your nervous system, if there's some physiological thing that's like, oh, once you have done this thing, you are now a different thing. Like your nervous system, you as a person has been updated in some fundamental way.
Well, I mean, if you put it this way, if you take the worst pain of your life and you have it 20 times, and then you've got the respect of being a warrior. Then you are, you have come of age, sort of thing.
Yeah,
you can go through the rest of your life knowing I've experienced horrific, horrific pain.
Yeah,
and almost everything else you go through will be measured against that, right?
Yeah,
and so you're like, oh, well, this isn't that bad. Like, imagine if you've had the worst day of your life ever.
Yeah.
Every day after that is going to be
20 times.
Yeah, I mean, I always say this when like people I know want to learn to skate. That I learned to be good at skating once I had a really horrible fall. And then after that, I was like, oh, okay, that was bad, but it wasn't that bad. I didn't, like, obviously I could. But that's the thing is, I then was able to skate and not be worried about it. But then there were still things that could be worse. Like, I could fall off and crack my head open, but for some reason I'm not scared about it. And so what I'm wondering is, is there some physiological thing that happens to you once you've experienced something that bad? Because you obviously you can say that, you can logic it out, but then I would love to know if there's actually something that actually does change.
Unfortunately, I didn't research.
No, I'm not saying you did. I just mean that would be a really interesting thing to study. Like, do you become a different thing having experienced something like that?
I mean, I would honestly, I'd go out on a limb and say yes, because arguably you become a different thing with all of your experiences.
Well, yes, okay, sure. So when I walk through a door, I'm a different thing.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, with any experience changes you, right?
There are
changes. I mean, you could literally talk about trauma and all of that sort of stuff. Those experiences change you. And it's, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily say that putting your hand in that glove 20 times is going to be traumatic, because it's sort of, it's a rite of passage, it's a ritual, a thing that you know you're going to do, sort of thing.
Yeah.
And there's all this sort of support around you, that sort of thing. But like, it you could see how it could be similar. Like, that extreme amount of pain could not necessarily rewire your brain entirely.
Yeah.
But it could, I don't know, your brain is plastic. If you do that 20 times, it's probably going to have some effect.
But that's all I mean, is that all of that is hypothetical. It's all like, it could do this, it could. And so I would love to know I'd love to for somebody to do some study on that of like, are you more able to go towards pain and not fear it, for example?
I think that depends on the person,
yeah,
doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, look, what I'm saying to you is that the reason this is all hypothetical is because it will change your brain. It literally will, because experiences change you.
Yes.
This sounds abysmal, to be honest. Just really painful for a long, long time. 20 times.
That's 100 minutes of bullet ants.
That's ridiculous.
Ah,
oh, my God. Strong and not just one. Like, multiple. I mean, at some point, the pain has just got to, like... Just,
it is worse, because you're having to go back to it consciously, knowing that what you experienced last time was really bad.
I mean, I feel like after, like, maybe the 10th time or something, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, but the second one... Imagine how scary the second one is.
Because you know what's coming.
Yeah.
Oh, God, no, the second... I think the first one would be the worst, and the second would be...
The second worst.
Yeah. And then they'd kind of start getting jumbled up, right? Like, no... Oh,
yeah.
Good Lord.
Does it leave any physical scarring, do you know? Because I feel like... Getting bitten by that many ants that many times.
Not to my knowledge. You know, they can suffer. It says that they could suffer intense pain, hallucinate, and shake uncontrollably. And there hasn't been any. There's not sort of been any recordings of deaths from it.
Yeah.
Because again, like, you know, I mean, being stung by these ants, it's not deadly. It just really, really, really hurts.
Yeah.
No. I mean, I'm not really sure. And this is what's really frustrating, because it's hard to find this sort of to find that sort of information on this. And also, it wasn't really the focus of this episode, but I'm glad we had a chat about it. But I guess that's kind of the whole thing for the Schmidt Pain Index. The worst thing on it is the bullet ant. It was made by Dr. Justin Schmidt because he worked with insects and he was being stung a lot, and he thought it'd be interesting to sort of log the pain of these. And as I said, it won an Ig Nobel Prize, and you can probably see why, because the man got himself bitten by, or stung by, 150 different species of insects, which is insane.
And he wrote some very beautiful words about them.
Oh my God. Mwah. Amazing.
It's like a menu. I would want to try it.
Right? We should make a menu. Yeah. That would be nice.
Yeah. I know. Like, this is. I'm sitting there reading the bee sting, and I'm like, maybe I should... I should sample. Oh, can I sample some of your finest bee, please, sir?
I think I'll have the yellow jacket.
Yes, if it wasn't so immoral, it would be a really interesting tourist attraction for him to open, where you could go to, like, essentially like a restaurant, and you could sit down and go look at the menu of all the different scales and go, I want to order one of those, and then they bring it along and they put it on your hand or your arm and it bites you.
That's mad.
That would be a really That'd good tourist really attraction.
That would be great, I mean, you get so many blokes doing it for staggers. so many. And, you know,
if you get through everyone on the menu, then you get the label of warrior.
Yeah.
Get a little badge.
Oh, but yeah, you get the glove.
I mean, big boy.
you get a loyalty card with 20 little stamps on it. And that you can wear the glove for 5 minutes.
Wow. I love how we, as, you know, capitalists just destroy cultures and make
How can I monetize this?
How can I make money off it?
Delicious.
Oh, is this your sacred held belief? No, it's mine now. You're going to pay me for it.
Wear 19 gloves, get the 20th free.
So that is the Schmidt Pain Index. We're almost done, but I have one more thing for you. It's the quickfire quiz.
Dun, 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 dun.
Ow!
Edition.
Great.
Very good. Thank you. So the rules are the same as always. I'll ask one question. That's one question between the two of you. The first person to buzz in with the correct answer after finished asking the question wins. What do they win, Jump?
5 minutes in the glove.
Good Lord. 5 minutes in the glove. Luke, what is your buzzer?
Munch.
Jump, what is your buzzer?
Ow.
Oh, just a little ow. What was that?
Yeah, it was
what
a level one.
Level one.
Yeah, it was the paperclip one.
Very good.
That was not even a one, the paperclip one.
Oh, it wasn't even subpar.
So my question for you is, what is the highest value possible on the Schmidt Pain Index?
Wow.
Luke?
4+.
I suppose 4+ is correct. Ding, ding, ding. That's right.
Technically, it's 4.
No. Sorry, no. Wrong.
How about this? You both get points, which means you both get the glove.
2.5 minutes in the glove each.
Yay, hold hands.
Oh, no, it's a full 5 minutes.
We have to hold hands the whole time.
Hope it's a big glove.
That is it for us today. That is it for us this week. Thank you to all of our patrons, with an extra special thank you to our executive producers, Danito and Rosa Rodriguez. But also thank you for watching. You can find the full references for this episode down in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Sunday, and why not leave us a nice wee comment? You can support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys, or you can find a contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and here on YouTube, and at SciGuys on TikTok too. Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
That's SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
You can follow me at NotCory everywhere.
Ow. You can follow me at Jumpkin everywhere.
Ow. You can follow me at LukeCupforth everywhere.
Ow.
Goodbye.
Ah!
Ah.
Oh, wow, that sounds a little bit less like pain. And more, stop.
Goodbye, please.
Talking about money is hard. People all over the world were taught never to talk about money, politics, sex, or religion in polite company. But on this show, my goal is to remove money from that list. And so I'm excited to bring you 50 Fires, a podcast about money and meaning from Blind Nil Audio and executive producers Chip and Joanna Gaines. Follow and listen to 50 Fires, a podcast about money and meaning with me, Carl Richards, wherever you get your podcasts.